Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
I'm HRN's Communications Director Kat Johnson with a preview of this week's episode of Meat in 3, our weekly food news roundup. Fall is finally here, so it's time to get funky and devote an episode to some of our favorite spunky microbes.
Fungi just provide this beautiful, whimsical lens on how the world works. They have so many roles. They're this strange and magical-seeming group of organisms, but they've got it all figured out.
Should you eat the cheese rind? Can you eat the rind? These are like the biggest questions.
We'll answer all of your questions about mysterious mushrooms and crazy curds. Plus, we'll give you a sneak listen to the newest season of Modernist Breadcrumbs. So tune in to this week's Meat in 3 on Heritage Radio Network, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
This program is brought to you by Jewel, sous vide by Chef Steps. Jewel takes the guesswork out of cooking. Learn more at chefsteps.com/joule.
Our guests are Dustin Wilson and Thomas Pastuzak.
It's pretty close.
Give it to me.
Pastuzak.
Pastuzak. I screwed it up the last time, so I wanted to make sure when I started I screwed up again. Pastuzak.
Perfect.
Okay. We'll talk to Dustin and Thomas about wines from the Northern Rhone, Reboul de Rhone, Somme 3, and some other cool wine projects. We'll taste the Northern Rhone that the guys brought in for our weekly wine sip, a Clop Renaissance Cornasse. I'm your host, Sam Ben Ruby. Stay with us for The Grape Nation on the Heritage Radio Network. We bring wine to the people. Master Sommelier Dustin Wilson is the proprietor of Verve Wine in New York and the newly opened Verve Wine in San Francisco, a retail and online marketplace for Somme curated wines. Thomas Pastuzak oversees the wine program for Daniel Hum and Will Guderra's Nomad Empire in New York City, Los Angeles, and soon to be Las Vegas. Dustin and Thomas came up through the ranks of great restaurants like Frasca, Colicchio and Sons, and 11 Madison, just to name a few. Dustin appears in the soon-to-be-released, we'll talk about that, Somme 3 movie. And Thomas is making some great wine in a bottle and a can. They are the creators of Reboul de Rhone, a four-day celebration of the wines of the Northern Rhone, this November 15th through the 18th in New York City. 100% of proceeds benefit the No Kid Hungry campaign. Is that the right date?
That is correct.
Okay, good. Right, welcome back to the Grape Nation.
Thanks for having us, Sam.
Thomas and Dustin, listen, we have a lot to talk about. There's a lot of stuff going on, and I want to cover everything.
You're in charge. Let's go.
But let's start with Northern Rhone wines. Let's talk about Reboul, and we'll get into a bunch of things. So, collectively, you guys have been around more wine than anyone. Collectively.
Well, I don't know about anyone. All right. Yeah, we've had our fair share.
So, take that, and you have to explain to our listeners this love and obsession with Northern Rhone wines that prompted you to, you know, put a festival. And I know you love other wines, but you really focused in on that.
Definitely. I think that there's a lot of great wine in the world that somebody like Dustin and I can get very excited about. When we started working together at the time, Dustin had just jumped into the position of wine director at 11 Madison Park, and I was just getting into opening the Nomad in New York, and we realized we had a lot of common passions, and one of them was the wines of the Northern Rhone. And we can get more into why we love them specifically.
Well, we will.
Yeah, we will. And we ended up doing a good amount of travel together, going to different wine regions, and certainly visited the Northern Rhone together. And we have had many great meals over many great bottles of Northern Rhone. And going back now, probably about 3 years, we were in the Northern Rhone on a trip and visiting a number of great domains. But in particular, we were at Domain André Perret and visiting his estate and tasting his Condrieu and his Saint-Joseph wines. And we were just reveling over how great the wines were. And we were talking about how there's so many great festivals and opportunities to celebrate different regions of the world of wine, Northern Rhone not being one of them. And André, he actually said it's a bit of a shame that nobody has taken the opportunity to do that. So Dustin and I looked at each other and we said, you know, this is great. We should do this. We should throw, you know, a big party to celebrate the area, but let's also do it for good cause. So when we were speaking with André, we said, well, okay, what would you call a big party that you might host in the Northern Rhone, you know, in the cellar or in the vineyard at the end of a successful vintage? You know, is there a tradition of that? Turns out there is, and it's called a reboul. And so reboul is basically the after-harvest party that's thrown for the harvest hands, for the cellar hands, basically as a thanks for a great vintage. And so we came up with the name reboul du Rhone. And that's how we kind of kicked that off.
This was what year?
I think it was early 16.
Yeah, because we were tasting the 15s out of barrel.
That's right, yeah.
And how, we'll talk about it a little later, but how long did it take to really firm up the idea and move on it?
Well, it was one of those things we, you know, you have great ideas while you're sitting around the table drinking a lot of wine, and then here, you know, you're in France. And then you get back home and you get back into the swing of things. So it was actually a couple of months went by before we even discussed it again. And it was one of those things that we were like, you know, that conversation that we had, we don't want it to turn into one of those great ideas that just fizzles out.
Right.
So Thomas and I were like, look, let's act on this and let's try to get the ball moving somehow. So, you know, if this was early 16, we threw the first reboul last November. So about a year and a half total that it took to kind of get this thing all planned and mapped out.
When did you decide that you would do it for a cause, raise money for a charity? Was that always
right away?
Idea?
Right away. You know, Thomas and I both worked a lot of various wine events that kind of fit into a similar mold, and we've always really enjoyed working them, and they're a lot of fun. But where we saw the biggest opportunity to kind of do something a little bit different is, you know, take this captured audience that we have and this. This audience that, you know, frankly gets to experience a lot of really great wines of the world and great food, etc. And let's make it for a great cause right out of the gates. And for us, you know, we had both worked with No Kid Hungry for a number of years. Thomas, I think, was like 11 or 12 years or something like that.
On the board.
He had done a number of events with them. He helped get me involved with them, actually. So I had done, I worked in a sommelier capacity with them for a few years. And, you know, they fit right into kind of what we do. They're very involved in the food and wine world. The charity itself benefits children who don't have a lot of great access to meals throughout the course of the day, especially in the mornings and the afternoon, like lunchtime and whatnot. And it creates programs for those children and helps to feed them. So for us, it was a really important cause and one we really believe in. And so we went to them, and they were our first choice when we came up with the idea.
We
sat down, we're like, hey, we got this idea for this crazy Rhone event, and da-da-da-da-da. And they were like, it sounds awesome, let's do it.
Thrilled. We'll come back and talk about the event and, you know, all the pieces to it. Before we get to that, you know, let me take advantage of your expertise and, you know, the amount of wines you've tasted. Give me some current intel on the region. Talk to me about recent vintages, any exciting new winemakers. You know, I mean, things never change. Some things do. You know, let's talk about... I think there's been a couple of great vintages. So tell me just what's going on there.
Sure. I mean, since you mentioned vintages, we're pretty excited because for Reboul du Rhone 2018, We're going to be really focusing on the 2016 vintage. Which is an excellent vintage in the area. 16 was a challenging vintage in many regions in Europe throughout the course of the year. But what ended up happening in the Northern Rhone is you have wines of great finesse, freshness, elegance. Honestly, for my personal style, and I think Dustin would probably agree that it's a vintage that shows off, you know, cool climate Syrah at its finest. It's really
so
bright.
Describe cool climate Syrah versus, you know, a vintage where it's not as cool. What are the characteristics?
Well, it's a big conversation, but, you know, Syrah, we love Syrah from the Northern Rhone because it's a combination of weight and intensity, but elegance and lift as well. The wines are very aromatic. They're spiced. There's plenty of fruit character, but then there's also a lot of earthy, savory, meaty, you know, bloody, sanguine kind of character.
Very common descriptors of those wines.
Exactly. And so Syrah, especially in a vintage like 2016, really sort of promotes those kind of characteristics, more of the mineral savory characteristics, which we love, plenty of acidity and juiciness in the wine. So it's has length on the palate, but it's also super fresh and refreshing. So the wines are extremely versatile. They also age really, really well.
And they're in the market now, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or coming, or they're there, right?
Exactly, yeah.
So they're accessible.
Correct.
Just quickly, 15, 14, the preceding vintages?
15, especially as far as critics are concerned, it is a blockbuster vintage. It is a very powerful, juicy, very driven vintage. The wines are going to be known for having great longevity, but they're also very intense and very weighted and very muscular in style. 2014, by contrast, a brighter, fresher, lighter vintage. So I think it also... It's an interesting part of the conversation of the region that 16, 15, and 14 show such different characteristics in successive vintages. It really does show you the vintage variation or vintage specificity that you have in a part of the world like the Northern Rhone.
So that's a fun vertical to have a 14, 15, 16 in front of you of a great winemaker.
Yeah, totally. And I think for us too, you know, what's interesting is, you know, we consider all of those vintages to be very good. Right. You get different flavors out of them, but I think that we wouldn't pick one and say, hey, we think this is the best vintage or something.
Do you
like
have
that.
A favor?
Well, I haven't really tasted many of the 16s yet,
okay.
So we'll see. We'll see.
We
tasted out of barrel, but we'll see.
No, I don't know about a particular favorite. I think there are vintages which have certain characteristics which
right.
you love, but
right. yeah. What I like about it is that it's three very good vintages that all have distinct
which
characteristics.
Which is great for the region.
Yeah, and it's great to tell a story.
What about anything new going on there? Any new producers? Any changes? I mean, I know the region is sort of some of the same guys for a long time, but anything of note?
Well, it's, you know, it's a very small region,
right.
And I think that a lot of the producers that are there, it's, you know, certainly remain, and I think they're still in the forefront. What we're starting to see now, though, are some of the younger generation of those same estates. Getting a little bit more involved in the winemaking.
So things are turning over.
The parents, yeah.
The kids are
next generation
is
kind of like getting their hands dirty a little bit with some of this. So they haven't quite taken over yet for the most part, but you are seeing more and more involvement from that next generation. You know, basically the people that are like Thomas
right.
and I's age.
I think that's going on everywhere around the world.
Yeah, and you're seeing like little kind of like micro negociant type producers kind of popping up here and there that are doing some interesting things, but
that
you know,
never really existed or
well, not that they haven't existed, but
not,
they haven't
not recently.
Yeah, they're
right.
they're fairly more recent than you know some of the bigger names.
Right. All right. So. For the people, the listeners that have not tasted through a lot of Northern Rhone wines, and the whole idea of this show is to drop some knowledge on everybody, be accessible, you know, give people some good ideas. Let's talk about the best way to dive into the region. I mean, if you want to go to Northern, taste Northern Rhone wines, I'll set it up. It helps to walk into a good wine store like a Verve or another place that cares about those wines, and they'll turn you on. But, you know, the guy just jumping into it's not going to buy, you know, an expensive Hermitage. Give me the primer, how you get into this.
Yeah, so I think, you know, the Northern Rhone is made up of a few different appellations. There's Côte Rôtie in the north. Now, mind you, all of the red wines from the Northern Rhone are always focused on Syrah. So keep that in mind. It's always Syrah-based wines. Depending on what exact appellation you are drinking from, they may or may not be blending in some white grapes into that as well. So Cote Rôti in the north, Syrah, but they'll oftentimes blend in a little bit of Viognier.
Another white.
Which is a white grape, yep. Right. Just south of that, you actually have the appellations of Condrieu and Château Grier, which is our white wine appellations that focus exclusively on Viognier. Then if you travel down south, you'll end up in Saint-Joseph, where Saint-Joseph is a long appellation running north-south on the left bank of the river, again, Syrah, but you'll also see some Marsan and Roussan blended in with the Syrah, or you can also have Saint-Joseph Blanc, which are those two same white grapes.
Right.
Then you've got Hermitage, you've got Cornas. Cornas is always 100% Syrah. And then you've got St. Pierre in the very south. And then, of course, Crows Hermitage, which is a large appellation that runs around Hermitage. So for me, I think what is interesting, you know, each of the appellations offers a little something different. But if you're a person
that's
focusing
price.
Yeah, you know, so I think if you're diving into Northern Rhone for the first time, I think where you find the most bang for the buck is in a place like either Saint-Joseph or probably Crows Hermitage. Those are two appellations that tend to produce very good quality wines, but still at a really approachable price point.
Okay. Can you, Thomas or Dustin, can you name a producer or two?
Sure.
At those levels?
Sure, yeah. I mean, jumping in and just to speak about Saint-Joseph.
You know, on the lower
yep.
value, price end.
Certainly.
Quality.
You know, a favorite would be Domaine Jean-Louis Chave, and certainly it's a very legendary, very historic estate. You know, there's been winemaking in that family for hundreds of years. While Chave...
C-H-A-V-E.
Correct,
Chave.
Yes, Chave. While the Domaine is known for making one of the most legendary wines of
the
area,
Hermitage,
Hermitage Rouge, right. and Hermitage Blanc, the family also focuses on a more affordable négociant line, J.L. Chave selections. There you find some Crows Hermitage, some Saint-Joseph that are made, a combination of fruit that is sourced from vineyards that the family owns, but also from fruit that are that is sourced from other vineyards in the area. And those wines offer really, really good value. They tend to be, you know, very well priced. You can find stuff under $40, you know, on a store shelf, perhaps under $30 as well. Another producer that one of whom will be joining us this year from Saint-Joseph, Domaine Monnier-Périol. These are
spell for us.
Sure. Monnier is M-O-N-I-E-R hyphen P-E-R-R-E-O-L.
Right.
So it's actually a sort of a coming together of two winemaking families using mutual resources to make really fresh, bright, accessibly priced Saint-Joseph wines. So I think that's another place where you'll find like really delicious, spicy reds that are very well priced. Again, you're talking about, you know, under the $40 mark, usually retail.
Are they, you know, like in Burgundy, there's Village wines or Chablis. I mean, what do you equate in the Northern Rhone to those type of wines?
Yeah, so I think, you know, there are no classifications in the
right.
Northern Rhone, but I mean, I think it would be generally accepted to say that probably Hermitage and Cote Rôti would be but kind of the Grand Crus of the Northern Rhone.
Right.
And then Cornas might be a little more of like a premier cru, and then you've got like Saint-Joseph and Crows Hermitage might be more of a kind of quote-unquote village-type wine.
What goes on the lowest end of that?
Now, you know, of course, there's always exceptions, right? There's certain producers in Saint-Joseph that probably outperform some Hermitage producers or Cote Rôti producers.
Right.
You know, you can kind of argue all day long about that. But
right.
generally speaking, that's kind of how I would think of it.
Right. It's interesting that there's no real classification. I mean, the appellations are broken down.
Correct, yes.
But, all right, so while I have you here, tell me about some other wines outside of the Northern Rhone in the store, in the restaurants, you know, that are exciting you. Are you getting crazy about any particular regions seasonally? I mean, what are you tasting? And give me more than, you know, one. Give me a few each.
Well, I mean, I certainly have to plug the Finger Lakes, New York.
I'm okay with that.
Great.
Because other than your involvement, there's a lot happening.
Yeah,
explain why now.
100% is. I think, again, we're talking about the Finger Lakes. It's upstate or mid-state New York, about 4 or 5 hour drive northwest of New York City. Beautiful landscape that is a glacially carved area, last ice age carved out these like really dramatic north-south facing lakes. It's beautiful to go to. It has a very it has a long history, certainly for vacationing, and a beautiful place to hike and to be in nature. But it is one of the youngest wine regions, I would say, in the world in terms of how many how few decades it's actually had in terms of wine production, or more focused serious wine production. But the quality and the level of what's happening right now is really fantastic, and every single year it seems like there's a new small producer coming up, or kind of what we were saying before, you know, there is a former assistant winemaker who starts his own little thing, or the son of a winemaking family that splits off and starts his own production. And it's an interesting combination of the region is young, the Appalachian is young, the number of people who are investing in it right now, it's very high, and with social media and with enthusiasm for people in the wine world to find new areas that offer great value but also high quality wine, it's a super, super exciting region. So you're used to seeing Riesling from the Finger Lakes, both in a dry...
The predominant
Riesling is certainly
what else
king.
Is coming out of it?
I mean, for other white wines, you know, there's some Burgundy-inspired Chardonnays being made right now. You know, there are certainly Alsace-inspired Pinot Gris, a fantastic amount of great rosé coming from the area.
I know Nathan and Pascaline are making a Pet Nat.
Yep, they're making some Pet
Nat. We'll talk about your wines, you know, a little towards the end of the show. All right, so Finger Lakes, I'm with you on that. We're going to go back and forth, two each. Give me something exciting to you.
Yeah, for me, I think in the last few months, I guess, I've been really excited about what's happening in Spain, particularly.
So Spain kind of hit your
radar
only recently.
Well, you know, I've known about Spain for a long time, obviously, and drank a lot of great like Ribera del Duero, Rioja wines, sherry, things like that. But I think for me, what's been most exciting in the last probably, I don't know, year-ish, has been some of the stuff that's coming from different places outside of those really kind of old school classic spots.
Let me hear.
So especially over in Galicia. So
Galicia.
Places like the Canary Islands separately, but over in Galicia, there's great producers now in Rías Baixas that are doing some really interesting things. Ribeiro, particularly. Ribera Sacra is a really interesting spot. Bierzo as well. So a lot of Mencia that's being grown
Mencia
over there. That's
the grape,
that's
right?
Really fun. Exactly.
And great.
Also a lot of other
point.
Like a lot
value,
of other
right?
Yeah, totally. And a lot of other great like local indigenous varieties, Broncelau and Ferrol and like weird things that you know most people probably haven't heard of. That's really fun.
Were you in Spain recently or no?
I was. Yeah, I went back in July. I was out there for about a week and a half and kind of toured through that whole area and. Some really exciting stuff, really delicious wines that are very terroir-driven, really great winemaking, and I mean, the terroir itself is really incredible to see. Local grape varieties, hands-off wine production methods, and the wines are
nice.
Fairly inexpensive, so for me that's really exciting.
Thomas, give me one more. So Finger Lakes, I'm with you. Anything else exciting to you?
You know, I'm going to jump back to France and say Loire Valley.
Okay.
You know, it's not even that. It's that it's a new and exciting area. But once again, I think there you're starting to see, you know, this younger generation that's really jumping in. The quality of the production is getting higher. The farming has always been really, really high quality. But now you're really starting to see Cabernet Franc for reds and Chenin Blanc. Particularly for whites that are becoming really, really exciting. Now, you know, you're seeing more labels that say Anjou or, you know, Saumur Champigny, these villages that used to, you would only see a few producers
right.
making wine there or putting it on the label, or you'd only find a few domains that are getting the wines into the country. And now you're seeing this like real upsurge of high quality producers. And again, the wines are super fairly priced. And especially for people nowadays are really looking for fresh food wines, you know, higher acid, more mineral focused wines. Chenin Blanc for whites and Cabernet Franc for reds, you know, certainly delivers those things.
The Loire. I think the thing with the Loire is, like you said, it's been there, but I think the discovery is more recent. I mean, there have been a lot of cheerleaders and advocates for it, but I think it's really out there more in New York,
mm-hmm.
you know, in bars and restaurants. All right, Dustin, give me, so Spain, Finger Lakes, Loire, give me one more.
Yeah, I think for me another spot that's a little out of the ordinary would be Oregon, but not the Willamette Valley, but rather there's a couple new producers in the Columbia Gorge area.
Okay.
They're doing some pretty interesting stuff, specifically one winery called Minimus.
M-I-N-I-M-U-S?
Correct.
Okay.
And then also Smock Shop band.
S-M-O-C-K, Shop, Smock Shop?
Exactly, Smock Shop, which that winery is also tied to another one called Hayu Wine Farm.
Nate Reddy.
Nate Reddy's
Nate's
going to
be on the show in about a
month.
Yeah,
I think, you know, that area is not quite as explored as Willamette. You know, Willamette gets all the...
Right.
All the rage.
Is there an appellation there? I know,
Columbia
or an
Gorge
AVA
is the,
it's called Columbia Gorge.
Is the appellation, yeah. And it's,
I mean,
it's,
if you had to guess, how many wineries are...
I don't know how many wineries are there, but
dozens,
when I start to see like multiple producers from the same area doing some really kind of more out of, you know, breaking, pushing the envelope type of stuff, and
so
it's really delicious, then I start to pay attention. And those
Oregon
guys are doing
cool
stuff.
Pinot. Or Oregon, you think of Pinot. We're not talking necessarily
Pinot
with these guys,
no,
right?
No, there's grown varieties. There is some Pinot Noir. There's Gewurztraminer. There's like Austrian grapes like Zweigelt and Blaufränkisch and like that kind of stuff too. So there's a lot of different types of things growing there, not just your typical Pinot.
That's a good area to grow some of those grapes, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah,
Pinot Gris has been growing up there,
yep,
and some other whites and all that. So that's Columbia Gorge in Oregon. All right, we'll have to keep an eye on that. All right, let's talk about, so those are some great recommendations. I'll post a bunch of stuff on our social media. Let's talk about Reboul de Rhône, because there's a lot of moving parts. Go back again. You started a little. The story and how and why it came about. It came about because you guys were traveling.
Yeah, so we...
just like Hospice de Bonne and all these other... There's these festivals.
Correct. So, you know, we were... As Thomas mentioned earlier, we were at André Perret and tasting with him, and he was kind of yelling at us a little bit. He was like, you know, in America, you have all these events and tastings about Burgundy and Champagne and Loire Valley and Riesling and all this stuff, but no, nothing for Northern Rhone.
Is there a Riesling festival or something?
Riesling Fire, yeah.
No,
oh, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
In New York. I thought,
in
New York.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
Yeah.
No, he was
right.
Talking about it.
He
US,
got in before
in
you,
US.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's his name?
Stephen Bitteroff. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
Von Boden.
Von Boden.
Yeah.
Who we love. Who does great.
Great.
But there was nobody doing anything for the Northern Rhone in the U.S. So, you know, being the type of people that Thomas and I are, you know, we looked at each other and, of course, immediately we're like, well, we need to be the ones to do this before
mm-hmm.
anybody else does.
That's right.
And so that was kind of the impetus for it. He told the story about how we came up with the name and, you know, we got back here to New York, approached the charity, and they were into it. So from there,
it was
really
it.
Just kind of a... A rolling of, you know, to-dos, and
mm-hmm.
You know, we learned a lot that first year. It was.
Well, let's talk about it, because as we talk about the elements,
yeah,
you know, you'll talk to me about, you know, any backstories or whatever. So I'll sort of lay out the elements, and you get specific. There's winemaker dinners. There's a walk around tasting.
Yep.
You know, with a lot of these great wine guys. There's a grand dinner. Is that a BYOB? Is that one of those deals where you invite?
It is a BYOB.
And
exactly.
Then there's an after party for all you hungover people.
Yeah.
All right. So it starts winemaker dinner. There's even seminars. I think you guys.
Yeah.
Do.
So we can walk you through the whole list of events. If you'd
yeah,
like.
Because these are the things that are available. For people to
yep.
you know come to
yep.
you know give them some idea and
all the tickets are available for purchase on the
we'll tell them later but
yeah.
Now the best place to go is online
on
where?
The Reboul de Rhône website. It's just Reboul de Rhône
REBOULEDURHONE RebouleDeRhone.com.
Correct.
And that'll get you to your site.
Yep. It'll outline all the events and connect you to a place to buy tickets.
So let's talk about the elements, but I have one curiosity. Has anything changed much or drastically since last year, or you basically you got similar template?
You know, last year we were so pleasantly surprised with how smoothly, you know, the big day Saturday,
the walk around tasting,
the whole seminar in the morning,
right.
Walk around tasting during the day, VIP
the whole
cocktail
flow.
Hour, the whole flow into the grand dinner, which is called La Reboul, into our after party. It was just a high energy day, and it was, you know, thanks to our team at Nook & Hungry and everyone who chipped in terms of the organization. It went so smoothly. So we're not changing a whole lot. We're just making it bigger and better. We're
right.
adding more great producers. We're adding more great activities throughout the course of the day. There's going to be more cool stuff to do. And then the big changes we would say is we had one grand dinner last year that was on a different day. This year we're doing two big boy dinners, the days leading up
to. So these are winemaker dinners, one's at a restaurant.
Exactly.
One you're doing, I guess the second one you had at a private home, right? Mm-hmm. Or a residence.
Exactly, yeah.
All right, so get specific.
Sure.
So one is what and the other is?
Yeah, so on Friday night, which I believe is the 16th.
Thursday night.
First night is Thursday night.
First night is Thursday night, yes. We're doing an awesome dinner. We're flying over a good friend of ours, Austin Johnson, who's the chef de cuisine at Frenchy restaurant.
And in Paris.
In Paris, exactly. He's going to be cooking a really, really great meal to be paired with what we're calling legendary vintages of the Rhone. So we're sourcing from France and from private cellars just a really incredible assortment of great wines to sort of showcase not just one appellation, but all of them and a number of really great years, and just kind of celebrate the region from 30,000 feet above while we're in this epic, in an epic dining room that overlooks Lower Manhattan. It's going to just be a really stunning setting, and we're going to have some visiting winemakers joining so that the guests at that dinner, and it's going to be a relatively small dinner, it's about 24 people.
Very intimate.
Yeah, so quite intimate, and we're going to have some winemakers who are over from the Rhone, and they're going to be hanging out that night, talking about the wines, and just interacting with the guests, and, just having a really good time, and that's kind of one of the kickoff dinners for the weekend.
And then you're doing another similar format where you're going to feature Cornas, right?
Yeah.
And tell me a little about that.
And Friday night, Cornas are nowhere, baby. Last year, we had a very special dinner focusing on Hermitage with Jean-Louis Chaffe. This year, we're doing a different appellation, a different focus, and the focus is Cornas, a beloved appellation of the Northern Rhone. And this is on the Friday night of the weekend, which is the 16th. Of November, and we're doing it at Legacy Records on the west side of Manhattan.
Probably one of the hottest, best restaurants.
Awesome, amazing restaurant.
Today. Great space.
Great friends of ours, great chef, Ryan Hardy, amazing cuisine. So we're really excited about it. And the focus of the appellation is Cornas. We're not just having one great producer, but we're having a small assortment of great producers from Cornas, including Vincent Paris, including Franck Balthazar, Mathieu Barret, and really, really excited to have Olivier Klopp from Domaine Klopp joining us, and it's going to be just an amazing night where we taste through each of these domains and some really great wines that they're bringing over from their personal libraries over
and
in
Florida. And that's generally a smaller group too,
mm-hmm.
bigger than the other night, but not
bigger than the Thursday night.
Right.
We're looking to about 50 people
still
for that night. Yeah,
pretty,
still fairly intimate, but larger. Yes.
Then the next day, Thomas, as you alluded to, hits the ground running and goes all night. Are the seminars open to the public, or that's more of a...
No, so the seminars, we keep for mostly the trade and the industry folks that are working with us. We have all these great producers here. Not everybody, as much as like social media might try to say otherwise, our lives are not just filled with travels to wine regions. And
right.
A lot of these sommeliers have never met these producers before. So we really wanted to make sure that the sommeliers that are assisting with the service throughout the course of the day get an opportunity to interact with the winemakers and be a part of something. So we're putting on, again, a seminar focused on Cornas for all the working sommeliers of the event. However, we do have a few seats available for the package holder. So we're offering various packages that someone can purchase for, let's say you want to attend everything over the course of the weekend.
You can get into that if that's important
then
to you.
That's accessible to the package holders. Otherwise, it's not a ticket.
It'll make sense when you go on the website
correct,
and see the packages.
Correct.
So that's the morning seminars, and then it blows up into the walk-around grand tasting.
We go right into the Northern Rhone tasting, which is all of the winemakers at various stations throughout pouring their wines.
Mostly from the 16th vintage.
We're looking at about 13 producers. We mentioned a few of them from Cornas, but then we also have the Domaine Monnier Perrault that we mentioned from Saint Joseph visiting. We've got Antoine Graillot from Domaine Graillot coming. Who else do we have? Christine Vernet, exactly. I'm drawing blanks here.
Going on?
Go ahead. No, going on this year.
Going on was there last year.
He came last year, yeah, so he's promised he'll come every other year.
We mentioned Mathieu Barret from Cornas.
Yeah.
Let's see, who are we? I'm trying to think. Wow, why am I drawing a blank?
That's all right. I was there last year.
They're listed on the website.
I was there last year. It's pretty vast.
We have some coverage.
And here's the nice thing, and you mentioned it earlier. I mean, there's... a big walk around with a lot of tables, and on each table are multiple tastings and all of that, and they are being poured by the most knowledgeable, best Somme force in the country, not just New York.
Correct. So we have top-notch sommeliers from all over.
Right.
All over the world.
Yeah, all over the world. We got guys coming in from France, from Sweden, so different parts of the U.S., so it's pretty exciting. And, you know, it's also supplemented with various food stations. So we've got a lot of restaurant partners from around New York that will be serving their cuisine. So it's a really, really fun tasting. We're expecting anywhere between, like, 600 and 800 people to show up.
But it doesn't
really fun.
It doesn't feel...
It's very well spread out.
Yeah.
We also have games going on and things like that, too. So there's lots to see and do, lots of wine to taste, lots of great food to eat. And it's from 1 to 4 in the afternoon. So it's a nice stretch of time.
And if you didn't drink enough there, you could continue the day and do what now?
Exactly. So then that rolls right over into the La Reboul dinner, which is the kind of the big celebration, right? So that's when all of the producers, again, sit down and join all of the attendees for
so you can sit at a multi-course table with a producer.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Right.
We'll have various chefs cooking for that meal as well, each preparing a different course. Each of the winemakers are sending over back vintage wines from their domain to add to the celebration.
Nice.
So not only will... Yeah, a lot of big bottles, a lot of older vintages. So not only will the guests be bringing some wine for them to share with the people surrounding them, but also the winemakers also providing a good amount of wine for the guests as well. So it's
People eventually get up and just start sharing wine?
Yes, they do. By the end of the dinner, everybody's moving around and sharing and tasting, and it's really fun.
That how many people? Is that like a couple hundred?
That dinner, it's big, but we're closer to like 120 guests.
Okay, which
that
is manageable.
Exactly, and you know, just to reinforce some of the things we said before, amazing sommelier team, all of whom are donating their time.
And a lot of them, not like five or six,
dozens. It's a team of about 40 to 50 sommeliers.
Yeah.
Not to mention, of course, the entire production team and people who are serving. So it's a really great turnout of people. It feels amazing to see people getting up, sharing their bottles, like you said. We will have a silent auction component. There's also going to be a live auction component. And this is where I just want to kind of circle back to, you know...
Did you do that last year?
We did, yeah.
You did, okay.
We did last year. And, you know, just to sort of say, we raised over $330,000 for No Kid Hungry last year. Again, 100% of the proceeds go to the charity. That's enough to feed 3.3 million children who are fighting with hunger.
That's the money shot right there,
true.
Man.
And the sad statistic, 1 in 6 children in the U.S. Has to face issues with hunger and is not able to necessarily gain access to proper nutrition for breakfast and for lunch primarily. And so it's an important cause, and that's the sort of thing that is really important to Dustin and I. And we're very lucky in this world of food and wine to have great resources and the availability and the connections to a lot of people on the restaurant side as well as on the winemaking side. So to be able to do this all for such a great cause, to use our resources to do good, feels really amazing.
Kudos to you guys for that. A lot of hard work creates a lot of resources for a lot of good people. And a lot of people do a lot of events, and I'm not sure they write down 100% proceeds. So that's a big deal, too. Let's close that out. That's the Saturday night dinner, auction, silent, and regular one, mm-hmm. Did you say? And then when that ends and you wake up in someone else's house, there's still one more place left to go on Sunday, right?
That's right.
Well, we didn't mention the after party.
Yeah. Oh, the after party that night. Right. I'm sorry.
If you want to keep drinking.
Go ahead.
the dinner then flips right over into a really great after party. So essentially the area that we utilize for the tasting during the day,
go back
as everyone's
space,
enjoying the dinner, that space gets flipped for the after party. So we'll have a DJ and lots more food, more booze, more wine.
What time did that break up?
So that breaks up around midnight.
Okay.
So finally, after, if you've stayed all day long, that's a solid
14
hours of drinking. You should have your fill by that point.
And then Sunday.
And that's really fun. And then Sunday,
we do a
great little, much more casual, calm gathering on the rooftop of the Nomad Hotel. And this is a chance, again, for all the working sommeliers and chefs and everybody that worked the event to interact with the winemakers that are there, say our kind of goodbyes. And
is that available to package people?
That is also available to package holders only. That is also not a ticketed event. So,
right.
Yeah.
Keep that in mind, and that'll become obvious on the website. All right, so let's go over the vitals. So the date of Reboul Tyrone 2018 is Thursday through that party on Sunday. Mm-hmm. That is, what's
November 15th through the 18th.
Right. Mm-hmm. 15th is Thursday night dinner. 16th is the Friday night dinner, the two private dinners.
Saturday is
a long day of events. Yep. You can go to the tasting and the dinner. You can go to just the dinner if you want.
Yep.
Right? You'll see that. And then there's the after party. And then Sunday, you have your thing. The locations...
Locations, so the
main things, the tastings and the dinner.
Yeah, the dinners, one of them is the Thursday night dinner is at a private residence in Tribeca, in a nice loft in Tribeca. Friday is at Legacy Records, as you mentioned. Saturday, the big day, everything takes place at 180 Maiden Lane, which is down in Fidei.
Is that the same location as last year?
It is the same as last year.
So it's a big, open, airy, glassy, beautiful space.
Yeah,
so you went back.
Great space. Really loved it. So there's no reason to change it up. So that's all day Saturday, including the tasting, the dinner, the seminar, the after party, all of it. And then the rooftop at the Nomad for Sunday.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. One more time. If people want more information, purchase tickets.
Rebulderone.com.
RebulderoneDurhone.com.
We also recommend following the Rebulderone Instagram, just at Rebulderone.
Okay. I was going to ask you that later, but I'll ask you again too. All right, so that's Rebulderone. That's a very exciting event. If you love wines from the Northern Rhone, it's kind of like an orgy. If you're interested or curious, these are the guys, and this is the place to really, embed yourself and, taste some things and all of that. All right, Thomas and Dustin, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I want to talk to you about some other things going on in your life. I want to subject you to our wine list, and we're going to talk about this Clop Renaissance Cornas. You're listening to The Grape Nation on Heritage Radio Network. We'll be right back.
This program is brought to you by Jewel Sous Vide. My name is Katie Mosman-Wadler. I'm the executive director of HRN and a real-life Jewel user. I use Jewel to help me host the most delicious dinner parties. When you cook with Jewel, there's zero guesswork. So steak, chicken, seafood, turkey, vegetables, and eggs all come out exactly the way you like them. The Paired app is super intuitive and has a great visual doneness guide. Jewel is awesome for prepping many perfect portions, making it easy to cook for a crowd, and it's hands-free so you can focus on entertaining while Jewel does the work. And pro tip, Jewel is also great for travel. I throw mine in my suitcase if I'm headed to a rental house with any kind of uncertain kitchen. From perfect steak to juicy, tender Thanksgiving turkey, Jewel makes the best food you've ever tasted. Just be sure to save some room for mini jars of pumpkin pie. Jewel, perfect food every time. To get yours, visit chefsteps.com/Jewel and use code HRN, as in Heritage Radio Network, to get $15 off for a limited time. That's chefsteps.com/JOULE, code HRN. A reason to be
alive. All right, we're back with my guests, Thomas and Dustin. They are the founders and creators of Rebulderone. Let's start with you, Thomas. You recently, very recently, launched a new wine project.
Yes.
And it is called Vinny, and the name is significant of what it is. So tell me, quickly, what's going on here?
Definitely. Well, just for a little bit of background, having lived in the Finger Lakes for about a decade...
went to school up there.
Exactly. I went to school in the area, and honestly was in the area, still planning to go to medical school, but fell in love with the world of food and wine, was working in restaurants there, wanted to cut my teeth and
get some experience. This guy was a musician, then wanted to go to medical school, and now he's like a sommelier. If I'm his dad, I smack him in the head. But I digress, so keep going, all right?
Thanks for that, Sam.
Okay.
I had a lot of passions, and I wanted to pursue them. And so I got into food and wine, I got into restaurants, and learned about the world of wine, and Finger Lakes was my backyard. I was a 20-minute drive from the restaurant where I was working at the time to, the top vineyards in the area. So on my days off, I wanted to get some experience in the vineyard and in wine cellars. And it was really fascinating for me with a science and an art background because, winemaking and the world of wine and food kind of combines art and science in a really fun way. So when I made my move back to New York City, trying to promote in the restaurants I was working, all of my friends' wines, all the Great Finger Lakes wines that were being made. And eventually I kind of got bitten by the bug of wanting to start my own production, sort of in the same way that chefs get to really create their own dishes and become known for, you know, for recipes or dishes. You know, I wanted to be able to create something from scratch. And so that's how I got into the winemaking side of things. So I launched a small boutique, a brand called Terrasen, with my wife in 2014. Focuses old vine, red wine, rosé, really inspired by our favorite producers in Europe. So we make some whole cluster Cabernet Franc, we make some Gamay that's inspired by Beaujolais, we make some rosé from Blancfranchiche, and with this vintage for the first time, a little bit of really crunchy, juicy red Blancfranchiche, which is going to be intended as a sort of spring, summer sipping wine, you know, enjoy it with a chill.
Great label. It's like a line drawing.
Exactly.
Ball. I can't describe
exactly.
It.
Exactly. It's a woodcut of a number of vines that are kind of entangled.
So that's Terrasen?
Terrasen.
Terrasen.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
And so that's a small boutique focused on old vine reds. Also launched, created a small Riesling project called Empire Estate. That's me and a couple of friends who are in the wine industry and the restaurant industry, and the focus there is just Riesling, specifically dry Riesling. Stylistically, it's inspired by my favorite dry Austrian and German Rieslings, but again, 100% Finger Lakes, but it's Finger Lakes terroir coming through with a nod to European winemaking style. And so there's a couple of angles there. Empire Estate, you can't think of anywhere else but New York when you hear the name. All we do is dry Riesling, and we really just make one wine, because you realize
that... Is it restaurant only, or
no,
both?
No, it's everywhere. It's restaurant, it's retail.
We've got it at the Verve
shop.
We'll
get to that. Calm down, will you?
No, what I want to say is it's great, because every time I blind taste sommeliers on that wine, they always call it Austria. So I think that's pretty cool.
There we go.
Yeah.
Well, I'm happy to hear that, certainly.
I've been seeing a lot of social media on Empire.
Which is great.
Not just you posting three times a day, but, you know, restaurants and stuff. All good. I'm being complimentary.
When other people
I see influencers and good people, sommeliers and all of that. All right, so that is Empire Estate. And really, you know, it is a terrific wine. And if you're in a restaurant or a store, you should give it a shot. Mm-hmm. And then
the new
cool
hotness,
new project.
The super new hotness is Vinny. And Vinny is a canned sparkling white wine. From the Finger Lakes, and there's, you know, the focus on Vinny really is the name is a fun play on words. It's a combination of the word vin, V-I-N, which is French for wine, plus N-Y, New York, equals Vinny. V-I-N-N-Y is Vinny. And so it is wine from New York, and it's sparkling white wine in a can. You know, the story is not about the grapes, but it's a combination of dry Riesling and Grüner that's deliciously bubbly, and it comes in these wonderful four packs, so four 250-milliliter cans. So you get a liter box, you know, right around $20 on a store shelf. And, you know, I've been thinking about this for a couple of years, but hadn't seen maybe enough traction in the canned wine world to really want to jump into it, you know, in 2015 or in 2016. But then you really started to see more and more wine producers putting high-quality wine in a can. And I, with this last vintage, with 2017, I said, you know what, it's time to pull the trigger and make this happen. And honestly, like, as sommeliers, our primary focus is get more people to drink wine often, as much as possible, wherever they go. And, you know, the can format is now actually considered a legitimate and, you know, quality-focused format. And so for those people who want to drink really good wine at the beach, at a pool, at a concert, when they're hiking, basically wherever bottles can't go, that's what Vinny is supposed to do.
Right.
So again, focus there is just get more people to drink wine, and specifically in this case, you know, more New York, more Finger Lakes wine.
And you said it's predominantly Riesling.
Mm-hmm, the dry Riesling Grüner Veltliner blend. It's limey, it's lemon lime, juicy, fresh, bright, crisp.
No additives to it.
No additives.
It's just a wine.
It's literally just sparkling wine, exactly.
Okay. And I know you released it this year.
Mm-hmm.
And
this summer.
It's available in restaurant stores. The distribution keeps getting better, right?
Exactly, yeah.
So look for Vinny. It's V-I-N-N-Y. It's a yellow and silver can?
Yep.
Yellow and white?
Yeah, yellow, white, silver.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And like you said, it's a great beach wine, party wine, backyard, or even, you know, inside and all of that. So those are some exciting projects. You're pretty busy. Plus, congratulations. You just had your second baby.
Thank you so much.
So
he's a little angel.
Yeah. All right, Dustin, so some interesting developments here. If you're a wine nut, you've been following the movie Somme, of which you were in the original one, and you were the only guy who passed the test, right?
Well, no, it was two of Brian and I passed.
McClintock,
yeah. We
glad passed. You and him are getting along.
Yes.
So it was, then the two of you. I forgot about
it. Yeah, and then Ian passes at the very, very end.
But the original Psalm, you know, Dustin was prominently featured in there, OG. And then there was Psalm... In the bottle.
Into the bottle.
Into the bottle. And now there is the third installment, Psalm 3.
Psalm 3.
What an original name.
Does it have
it's so funny because I say, oh, Psalm 3 is coming out. And everybody goes, I didn't realize there was a second one.
So tell me a little about, you know, the movie, what's going on in it, and, you know, where we can see it or eventually see
it.
Yeah,
you know, on a selfish front, you know, I'm featured fairly prominently in the film, and
some new people from the past.
So is my wine shop, so I'm pretty excited about it on that end. And I just was actually out in Napa recently to watch the movie with a crowd, and was super well received. So we're really excited about it. I think it's a great balance of, if you've seen the other two, it's a good balance of both entertaining like the first one was, but also has a little bit more kind of wine geek kind of fun stuff in there too. Whereas, you know, the second movie was very, very wine heavy and didn't have a whole lot of like,
so more fun. Mass appeal, are you saying?
Definitely more mass appeal than the second one.
Like a fun movie, not just some movie. Nerdy insider baseball movie, right?
You can watch it and whether you know a lot about wine or not, and just be entertained.
So where can the average guy go or find it?
So through the end of the year, it's doing these kind of very limited one-night-only theatrical runs throughout the country. So my recommendation would be to, if you're not already following the Psalm Films Instagram account, that tends to be the primary place where they make the announcements where these
So it's not the classical movies
place.
Opening on a Friday.
No. You know, it's a documentary, so it doesn't
November
quite go
7,
that way.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. So their
website?
They don't
just really... Google Psalm 3.
Yeah, I would recommend just go to Instagram and follow them on their account. They're posting about screenings all the time.
And you're very excited about that. It's
I'm
a very
excited
cool.
About it. Yeah.
Yeah,
he looks really good in the movie too.
Well, it was really cool. You know, without giving anything away, you know, I got to meet some really heavy hitter people, and I got to pour wine for Jancis Robinson and Steven Spurrier. And
I
Fred
saw
Dame
on Instagram
and,
today. If you, look at Dustin's, which I'll give you the
handles. Which for me, from a sommelier career highlight, you know, it was pretty cool.
You couldn't put a suit on for that.
Fly to Paris.
For those two?
All right. You know. Wow.
Tough room. All right, so that's Psalm 3. That's brand new. So like I said, you know, if you're really into some very cool aspects of the wine world, it's definitely a fun movie. And let's talk about some of the new people, like Laura Maniac is in it. Who are people that...
Yeah, we've got great representation from New York, Laura Maniac. Aldo Somm is in
Aldo's
the movie.
Aldo's in it, right.
Michael Engelman from The Modern. Who else do we have? Pascaline LePeltier is in the movie.
So
Sabato Sigaria.
Some great people.
Awesome lineup of people.
All right, and you recently opened your second location of Verve in San Francisco.
Indeed.
I think I nailed it when I described it, you know, early on. I think Verve is a retail and online marketplace, you know, with very curated, mm-hmm. which you're a master sommelier.
Yep.
So, I mean, if you have the luxury of being in San Francisco or New York, you could walk in. But otherwise...
Yeah, if you're not in those towns, you know, visit the website. I mean, we're trying to be a little bit more digital first from a retail perspective. And, you know, really took a lot of time and energy to make the online experience really robust and easy to use and with great wine. So if you like kind of those more curated types of wines, you can visit the site and find a lot of really great stuff.
And one of the things that...
How many states, by the way? I think it's like almost the whole country.
Yeah, I think we can serve basically...
Wine and liquor shipping.
I think it's 42 out of the lower 48 states.
So 42 states.
Good point, Thomas. So double check that you can be, you know, served
by
that.
I will say, you know, shipping wine is a huge pain in the butt.
And, you know... compliments to you guys. Two of the things that you are superior at is service and hospitality. I mean, I think that's why you're where you're at. You're at 11 Madison. You're at Nomad. You know, you continue to thrive in the business. I think when you walk into a Verve, you're not just walking into a wine store and being helped. I think it's a hospitality experience.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think the connection, which is, you know, a nice thing.
Thank you for that.
Yeah.
Appreciate that.
I wouldn't expect less because, like I said, that's your background. All right, so that's what these guys are doing. They're pretty busy. We're going to wrap up pretty soon, but I want to do two things. I want to do our wine list, where I ask you guys a bunch of questions about your preferences. If you remember, we did it last time. We did a special Rhone edition, Reboul de Rhone. We're going to do edition number two. And then for our weekly wine sip, we're going to just quickly talk about this wine and evaluate it and rate it and everything. All right, so this is the special Reboul de Rhone edition volume two wine list. So, we may have covered this earlier, but what are you drinking now? What's on your table now? What's in your sights? Is it seasonal? You know, I know you said Spanish. I know you... But any other stuff?
Yeah, I think I'll kind of... I like to think about what's in my fridge at home. And
right, that's what I want to know. Which will be different 4 months from now, but what about now?
Well, it ties into one of your questions earlier, value from the Northern Rhone. Côte du Rhône from producers that are known for making high-quality wines, like a Côte du Rhône from a Domaine Klopp, you know, would be a good example, or a Franck Balthasar, for instance, you know, juicy, young, fresh wines like that. Finding delicious Beaujolais, you know, from any number of appellations in the area, whether it's a classic like La Pierre, for instance, always has a place. You know, I drink Nebbiolo all the time. It's one of my favorite varietals, and so.
But not just Barolo.
No, exactly.
Give me some
Nebbiolo d'Alba from top producers, a producer like Produttori del Barbaresco. It's
right.
A commune of growers.
There's the plain regular Produttori.
Exactly. The Normale Barbaresco, or even the Nebbiolo Lange Nebbiolo, which is a great value. It's delicious. You know, certainly I mentioned Riesling from the Finger Lakes. That's going to be there. You have to have standbys like a Chablis, you know, even if it's an entry-level village wine, you know.
Right, I didn't ask you what you're drinking for the next year.
I'm telling you what's on my shelf.
Those are all good choices. Now, what are you drinking now?
So, if we're being honest about what's in our refrigerator right now,
mine
is actually mostly stacked with Vinny.
Boom!
Vinny?
Yeah, I've got a lot of Vinny in the fridge right now. We got a lot of Vinny in the fridge at the moment.
So what else?
That gets cracked open from time to time.
There we go.
Also been, likewise, always got some Northern Rhone stuff hanging around.
Okay.
And for me, still Beaujolais. I love drinking Beaujolais, like especially with a little chill on it. It's just easy. Most of my wine consumption, frankly, happens when I get home at night and from work, and I just want something kind of easy.
You're still going to drink and taste stuff.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, this show's not about me, but all I'm drinking right now is Beaujolais.
Yeah, just like Gamay, inexpensive,
Barolo,
just like
chuggable,
enjoyable stuff. Like,
yeah,
you know, anything
just
fancy.
Diving deep into that. All right, so I asked you this last time, but let's do it again. Favorite Rhone wine and food pairing? It's a very specific, you know, deep, brooding, spicy, meaty wine. I could ask you, what does it pair well with? But what's your favorite pairing?
You know, I'm going to go ahead and do the high-low thing here and say just like an insanely delicious burger. I'm a big fan of
juicy burger.
A juicy burger. A bacon cheddar burger.
I was just going to say, it can handle the cheese
and
the
cheddar.
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
you know, maybe a little smoke on the bacon, give it a little smokiness, you know, it complements the smokiness of, you know, Northern Rhone Syrah, I think is delicious, and you're not spending a ton of money on, you can certainly say like a great dry-aged ribeye, and for sure, but.
Burger more accessible.
Burger's accessible.
Say no more. What about you?
So, I can't really argue with that or make anything better than that, so I'll say on the white Rhone side of things, because I think that everybody forgets that they do make white wine there.
We talked about it actually.
A great,
the last
like,
show.
Kind of white Hermitage or white Saint Joseph wine that's
with
Marsan base with like a nice roast chicken and maybe like, especially like a more fall preparation, maybe some morel mushrooms and like butter and like some richer flavors with that is pretty tasty.
That's a good call. All right, so without incriminating, leaving out, you know, not being afraid to answer the question, favorite wine restaurant or bar in New York that, one, is a good wine restaurant and bar, you know, good attention to wine, the list, people, the knowledge, but throw Rhone in. Like, you know they're going to have some bottles and all that. Can you think of any?
Yeah, I'm sure we can come up with a few.
We can definitely come up with a few.
I hear the Nomad.
Give me a couple.
Stuff.
You know, I'm not going to plug Nomad because I'm not...
Well, I'll plug
Nomad.
Will you vouch for me that the Nomad has enough range of Northern Rhone selections to satisfy even the most discerning customer?
Yes, 100%.
Okay.
Everything.
So
from
Nomad.
Okay.
Continue, please.
But I wanted to throw in, because you know it's kind of emeritus to Revol de Rhone, Pasquale Jones. You know, I love pizza. I would eat. I have a second stomach for pizza. I would eat it every day. And they have amazing pizza, Pasquale Jones, and they have a really well curated. You know, it's a smaller list, but it's really well curated, and that's where you're going to find Northern Rhone Syrah to go with. You know, great pizza.
Always
for
a good
pork shoulder. Yeah.
All right. Dustin, you
can't disagree
one?
With that. I love Pasquale. I have two recommendations.
Go.
One on the kind of more casual end of things. Gotta give a shout out to Caleb Ganser and
Company
8 Events or Naturel.
It's a show favorite.
Really love those guys. Love
what
they're doing.
But Rhone wines,
really
you can go in and
yeah, they have
drink
great Rhone wine
okay
on the list, and it's also just a great
what's the other
place
one
to drink wine. The other place I think is it's a little more high end is Michael Engelman of the Modern.
Incredible. I just ate there.
Absolute best wine list in the city right now.
Best everything.
Those guys are absolutely killing it. What
yeah
he's done with that program is really amazing.
So Company is a very cool, hip place to, you know, have a glass, even some food. Engelman at the Modern,
mm-hmm,
you know, will give you that experience. Thomas at the Nomad, same thing. All right, those are all good ones. Favorite all-time Rhone wine? Under 50 bucks.
Oh, under 50 bucks.
Ooh.
Any time, vintage, whatever. But it just wasn't an arm and a leg.
Can I? Again, I hate.
Oh, to, sorry.
Go for it.
Can I?
Before you forget.
I'm not going to remember. I don't know the producer's name. Is that okay?
It's okay. I'll do
it's
some
an
research.
Experience. It's an experience. Went to Burns a couple years
ago. Burns
like
in Tampa, Florida. One of the great
ago
wine restaurants in the
great
world.
Great wine restaurant. Went down there. I can't remember why I was down there, but I was by myself. Decided to walk across the street over to Burns and sit down in the bar room area, ordered a great steak and a bottle of 1979 Cornas from some like negotiant that I don't think exists any longer, and it was $39 on the list.
See, that's the place, the experience, and the uniqueness. That's the answer I'm looking for. What do you got?
You know what? I'm going to do... Let's find something accessible that you find now in a city like New York. I'm going to go and say the Van de Pie Syrah from Domaine Jamais. It is in a very esteemed estate in Côte Rôtie.
Yeah, yeah.
You carry that, right?
Yeah, Verve Wine has it.
So Jamais is this legendary Northern
yeah
Rhone producer, but they make
But they make some introductory level wines, including a just
J-A-M-E-T.
Yep, bottle labeled Syrah.
What's the name of the wine?
Well, it's Van de Pays Colline Rhone.
It's a Van de Pays Jamais.
But it just says Syrah
got
on the
it
label and Jamais. And there's not a lot of it that goes around, but when you find it, it's delicious and you're tasting.
Wine has it.
Top wine.
From time to time.
That's where I sent all my friends.
Two great, you know, calls. I wouldn't expect less from you guys. Last question, and then we're going to taste the wine. Best Rhone wine, around $15, $15, $20. I need a red. I need a white. I always say this, it's super redundant, but my kids are in their mid-20s, they're starting to make money, they're going to a dinner party, they want to bring a nice wine, but they ain't spending $40-$50, they're going to spend $15-$18-$20. What's the killer bottle, white and red?
Mm-hmm.
But stay within the Rhone for me as best as you can.
Yeah, I think for me on the red side, I might have to go back to a staple like Jean-Louis Chave and the Negociant stuff that he does.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So for me, like the Côte de Rhone that he produces under the Jean-Louis Chave Selections label, I think hits right around $20.
But the quality, the value,
super high quality,
the producer,
coming from a
all
fantastic domain
boxes are checked.
Yep.
So
exactly.
Chave, okay. Thomas?
I'm trying to think of a good white counterpart that would fit in that price point.
Is it tougher?
It's tougher because there's not.
So
this
give
much
me
out
the
there
best value white in the Rhone.
The Monnier.
Yeah,
we said
Monnier
Pereira.
Viognier from Monnier Pereira. He's a great producer, great value in all of it. All right, I'm going to post all those. All right, so we're going to wrap the show up, and I only have a few minutes to do this, but every week we taste a different wine on air for our weekly wine sip. For this week, I asked Dustin and Thomas to bring in a wine, and tell me about this wine.
So, in honor of the Revol de Rhone, and not only in honor of Revol de Rhone, but in honor of this producer in particular, we brought a bottle of Domaine Clap Cornas, the Renaissance bottling from 2011. And it's pretty special and really kind of bittersweet to be drinking these wines just a few months earlier. August Clapp passed away, and really, really big deal to not just Cornas, but all of the Northern Rhone. So we've been trying to drink as much Clapp lately as possible, and we're really honored this year to be kind of making Cornas a pretty big focus of the Ribault
de Rhone.
So I think it's just goes without saying this is a great one to pop.
So great backstory. Let's talk about the wine. So it's Clapp. You know a little about Clapp.
Yep.
It's a Cornas. Did you say earlier Cornas has
always
to be 100% Syrah?
Correct.
So there's 100% Syrah wine. Renaissance is this particular bottling.
Correct, yep.
Give me approximate retail on this.
Approximate retail is right around $100.
Okay,
actually.
So yep. It's a baller wine.
Yeah.
Not
it's also
crazy.
Has a few years of age on it.
Right, it's a 2011.
2011.
Quickly, 11, a good vintage?
Very good vintage.
Okay.
Again, we kind of were talking about, you know, some of those more kind of quote-unquote classic vintages. The 2011s have great elegance and great finesse, and while it's not a really big, powerful vintage, I think this is kind of the quintessential style of Syrah, that especially Sommelier is like us.
Because
really
of what you just said, would the 11 be a little less price-wise than some of the other?
It would, versus
fancy,
like
fancy.
2010, for example, which was much
good
different
value.
Vintage. And, yeah, so this
you get
is
into Clapp, you get into Cornas, you get into Renaissance.
Yeah, Clapp, right. You can't really talk about the evolution of Cornas without talking about
right.
Clapp.
All right, let's evaluate it. So I want to talk about two things, this wine and what's classic in Rhone wines and this particular Cornas. So the color, deep purple,
mm-hmm.
What do you see in there?
Yeah, deep purple is good. Almost a little
it's
bit
a little
of
garnet.
a garnet color
it's
to it, too.
It's got about 7 years of age to it.
Okay, give me nose descriptors.
So, you know, Thomas mentioned a really good number of descriptors earlier, but you know, for me, it's very classic, meaty, smoky. What I love about this too, it's got great like black olive, kind of salty, more charcuterie kind of.
Nowhere else
do
you get
it.
Those descriptors bunched up like meaty,
yeah, no,
smoky,
it's
tapenade, bacon.
Yeah, totally,
right?
Yes, bacon, tapenade, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
I mean, those are just terrific descriptors.
It's extremely savory. Yeah.
Savory. Those are all savory things. So that's the nose. All right, let's throw it over the tongue, and let's talk about mouthfeel first. Is it a medium, medium plus, full? What do you get?
Well, we can talk about that in terms of like the, you know, quantitative components, but I just want to say, you know, this really on the palate shows what's great about Northern Rhone Syrah. It's dark and dense, and it has an intense concentration of flavor, but it's also still very refreshing and very lifting.
Right.
There's a lot of acidity, that like sensation if you've been into a lemon, you salivate right afterwards, you have plenty of that acidity in this wine, which refreshes you after taking
a sip. You get the full mouth and attack, but it's not heavy or cloying or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the mouthfeel. I mean, I get exactly what you said. How do you describe that? I mean, you did describe it, but if you had to... Is there a word to describe that? Not really.
It's just not like weighty, you know? It doesn't
it's not weighty.
Down. Yeah,
it's not weighty, but it's not simple.
It's got a lot of flavor.
Right.
It's got a lot of richness to it, but it's not heavy.
All right, let's talk palate. Do the nose descriptors translate to the palate?
I think so. For me, it really translates, especially the saltiness of it. You know, it really translates well. So again, you kind of go back to pairing this with like a nice cheeseburger with bacon and whatnot.
Bloody
and,
steak.
Yeah, or like a great ribeye or something. It's got that like extra salty kind of meaty component to it that I think pairs really nicely with those
yeah.
things.
Yeah, I mean, it's classic with that.
It's classic for a reason.
Do we like this wine? Do we love this wine?
I love this wine.
Thomas?
I'm a, you know, medium plus to high love on this wine.
Okay. All right. So that's the 2011 Clapp, C-L-A-P-E, Renaissance is the bottling, Cornas is the region, and the grape is Syrah. All right, guys, we're going to wrap the show up. If you have a question, suggestion, wine happening, or event, hit me up at sam@thegrapenation.com. That's sam@thegrapenation.com. Follow us on Facebook at The Grape Nation. Follow us on Instagram at SBenRuby, but follow the hashtag TheGrapeNation on Twitter or at BenRuby. Also subscribe to The Grape Nation podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify. We'll post Dustin and Thomas's wine list and information on our weekly wine sip across all our social media sites. Before we go, let's talk one more time. If you want to find more information on Ribault de Rhone,
RiboldRhone.com.
Vinny Wine.
Mm-hmm. VinnyWines.com.
Okay. Verve, if you'd like to shop online.
VerveWine.com.
Okay.
V-E-R-V-E.
Right. And if you're in New York City downtown, you walk in to the store in the newly recent open store in San Francisco. Where
in San Francisco, it's in Pack Heights.
Pack Heights.
Fillmore Street. Fillmore,
okay.
Washington. Yeah.
Please walk in there. If people want to follow you guys, Thomas, on social media.
Yep. It's at my name. At Thomas Postushak. It's a tough one to spell. So
Jesus Christ.
I hope you have a lot of printed material to give
Google,
out.
Google.
Yeah. All right.
And or at Dustin. Look at the hair.
Dustin.
At Dustin Wilson MS.
Right. And also an Instagram site for Bolderone.
Correct.
Right. Yeah. So I want to thank our guest, Master Sommelier Dustin Wilson and Thomas Postushak. Did I get that right?
You crushed it. Yeah, you got it that time.
Jesus Christ, I suck at that.
We should drink more wine together.
We will. Thank you to our engineer, Jeet, this week. And thank you to everyone at Heritage Radio Network. I'm Sam Ben Ruby, and you've been listening to The Grape Nation.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Aweli, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.